Did you ever get to the point where you were going to give up, or did you believe the whole time?
I mean, I've given up on ideas like, 20 times myself.
I'm Scott McGrew. Welcome to Sand Hill Road.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
3 years later, he spent 5 years in stealth mode and amassing another
person. Stealth mode.
So I think the first thing that I hear sometimes from early stage entrepreneurs is, oh, we're a stealth company.
And we actually stayed in very much a stealth mode.
One of the things I've always found sort of tantalizing about some Silicon Valley startups is the idea of stealth mode, a startup that won't tell you what it's starting up. As a reporter, a secret always entices me.
Yeah, hi, my name is Arvind Jain. I am the CEO of Glean Technologies.
Glean Technologies, which created a system for searching and indexing communications for business, just came out of stealth. So I invited CEO Arvind Jain to sit down and talk about stealth, along with Quentin Clark.
My name is Quentin Clark. I'm an investor at the venture capital firm General Catalyst.
So tell me about stealth. I mean, what does stealth even mean? We hear about this, but it sounds kind of, sexy and spy novel-y, but what is a company in stealth?
Well, a company in stealth is something that nobody else knows about. So we get started, we have an idea, start to work on it, but we don't tell anyone what we're doing. And there are reasons for it. I mean, we can talk about that, but essentially that's what it means, that it's a company that hasn't been announced. People don't know about it.
So what's the process of bringing people in? I mean, obviously you have to hire people. You have to go to venture capital. What's the process of hush, hush, don't tell anybody?
Yeah. So normally what happens is since nobody knows about the company, the initial set of team that we build, gets built mostly with people who you know before, like people who you have worked with. So you'll go and talk to them and tell them about your...
People you trust.
People you trust and you tell them about your great idea. Hope they get excited and join you. The venture capital, folks, they all understand this. They want to meet with you, entrepreneurs and... And so for them, I don't think it matters, whether you're stealth or not. That's their business.
So in your case in Glean, what secrets were you protecting when you were in stealth?
Yeah, so I think the first and foremost, we were solving a problem that we felt that, other folks were not interested yet in solving. But we felt, it was a big problem, which was going to get worse over the next few years. And so we wanted to have that head start, build a really good product to solve that problem.
So Quentin, tell me about when he came to you and said, hey, he'd already raised some money, about $15 million, right? And you heard the idea. Tell me the process of hearing that idea and the decision-making you made.
Yeah, I was introduced to Arvind by one of my partners. Arvind is a known entity in the community and is close to other founders that we work with. And so I was eager to take the introduction because his reputation preceded him.
I'll break in here with that background. Arvind Jain is a Silicon Valley rock star, having founded cloud data company Rubrik, a $4 billion company, and before that, as a distinguished engineer at Google.
I didn't know what he was really working on. I was just told something in search is all I was told. And it was very good for us because I've been looking into the enterprise search space for a while. And I sort of on my own created a, you know, rubric, if you will, for what I thought it would take to be successful approaching that problem in that space. And when Arvind and I first met, you know, we really hit it off because what they were doing and how they're approaching it and his background and the team that he built at Glean was exactly aligned with kind of what I learned looking into that problem space over the last couple of years.
It's remarkable you were looking into and thinking about the problem when Arvind comes to you and says, hey, I have a secret project. And it's more or less the same thing.
Yeah. And that's when it gets to, I was then selling him on getting involved as opposed to him trying to sell a venture capitalist on providing capital. Because I spent enough time in it to know how hard it is technically, the team that he'd put together. And one of the things that I've said to people is, near as I can tell, they made no mistakes building the underlying technology. And it's because of the kind of the quality of the team that they put together. And it's hard. It's hard to get right.
I've heard that over and over from investors is the team. You know, it's like, well, what are they working on? I don't care. It's that team. And he's put together an amazing team.
Yeah. It is a very high quality team. And it's a problem space that requires that. It's not just another SaaS app, throw something up there, a little cheaper, a little faster, maybe see if you can get some traction. This is a deep, deep, deep technical problem. In fact, in a lot of ways, it's a deceivingly complex problem because it looks simple on the surface.
Arvind, you've raised about $55 million, is that right?
Yes.
These days, that doesn't sound like very much money. And I know that's absurd to say, yeah. But some of these funding rounds are just nuts. Why is $55 million enough for now?
Yeah, I mean, so we're a small company. We have about 50 people, and that capital actually is going to last a long time. You know, with that size team, so we felt it's adequate. I mean, I think the other thing is also there are like different ways to build business. You know, you can go and raise a very, very large amount of capital. And you don't really know what to do with it. Sometimes, you know, that puts pressure on you to then say, you know, you got to use this money that you raise. You know, if you raise $200 million, like you need to grow faster than what you can really actually manage to sort of accommodate and build a healthy, you know, team. So, you know, for us, like our strategy is to make sure that, you know, we have enough capital to do what we need, but then like not have that undue pressure of trying to grow faster than what we can really accommodate, you know, as a team.
You've put several companies together now. What other lessons would you give younger founders? You know, don't take too much money is one of them. What other lessons would you pass on to younger founders?
Yeah, I think the first, like most important lesson, according to me, is just having belief in your idea. Like oftentimes I see so many people start working on ideas. And like, you know, you often hear that, you know, startups, like 9 out of 10 startups fail. And I like to actually correct people that I think it's more like 99 out of 100 startups fail because, the other 90 failed in people's own mind. Like, it's your idea and like you give up after some time. And so that's number one. Like, you know, when you are solving a problem, think simple. If it's a problem that needs to be solved, you can solve it. You can build a company with it.
Did you ever get to the point where you're going to give up or did you believe the whole time? And either this company or the company before, or?
I mean, I've given up on ideas like, you know, 20 times myself, you know, like many, many things that I thought were problems that had to be solved. But then like, you know, as an engineer, you start to think about what can go wrong. And then at some point, you know, you sort of just start, you know, stop believing in your own idea. So yeah, I've gone through that journey myself many times where I wanted to start something and then I chose not to. And nobody rejected me. Nobody, you know, I didn't go to a investor who says, no, I don't like this idea. You know, I rejected those ideas myself. So I think luckily, with the current problem that we're solving with Glean, it's actually such a fundamental problem. You know it. Like, you know, everybody you can, you know, go talk to, they struggle with finding information within their workplace.
You were nodding your head when we were talking about, you know, giving up on ideas.
Yeah, I mean, most early investing, of course, is all about founders.
Venture capitalist Quentin Clark from General Catalyst, which invested in the latest round.
And it's all about finding people that have the conviction about the problem they're trying to solve. And we often talk about this in a couple of different ways. One, founder fit for the problem. Like, why does the founder care about this? And why do they have potentially an advantage to prosecute it and to get after it? And we also talk a lot about curiosity and will, because starting a company, it takes a lot of will. It is not an easy journey, and it's not for everybody. And you have to be very open to learning along the way, and you have to be open to the reality that there's going to be challenges and obstacles, and you have to have that kind of perseverance. And that's kind of a personal characteristic. And it's not necessarily something that is only just inherent. It's something that people can develop over time as well. You know, they may go through some part of their career happily learning at larger companies and absorbing all that, and then kind of wake up one day with just this energy and this charge to go tackle something.
Have you run into people pitching you in which you thought to yourself, no, they don't have the passion. They don't have the, they found this problem and they want to be a CEO of a startup.
Yeah, I think most people that know the venture capital world pretty well know that most VCs take literally hundreds of new company introductions a year. And we only make a few investments. So the answer to your question is yes. You know, we've certainly encountered, you know, people that it's a good idea, but maybe they don't have the right background. So why are they particularly positioned to win? Or it's a good idea, but they don't really show any sort of grit and will to take on the hard stuff. And it's not that difficult to get to the bottom of that pretty quickly when you meet people.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Arvind, how do you become passionate about office search?
Well, it's a problem that I have faced my entire career. The way we got started on Glean was that before this, we were building another company called Rubrik. And we'd grown very fast, very rapidly. Like in 4 years, we were more than 1,000 people. And we noticed that as a company, we were not getting, you know, the same level of productivity across our organization. And so we would ask people, we would do annual surveys. And the first complaint, you know, the biggest complaint that people would actually write about was that we cannot find anything in this company. I don't know where to go and look for information. I don't know who to go and ask for help. So that was the biggest problem that you know our team reported, and I started to look into it. I mean, of course, I was myself facing the same problem, and so as we sort of dug deeper into that, you know, figure out how to solve it, look for products in this market, I realized, oh, you know, there's nobody who wants to solve this problem. There's no products in this market for this, and this is such so fundamental. So then we went and talked to a few other startups, you know, and other companies that were fast growing, and see if they were facing the same challenges. Maybe they solved this problem and they hadn't. So that was sort of like, you know, how this got started. Yeah.
I can think of two examples of what I think you're saying is, you know, God, years ago, the fellows that created Hotmail were trying to create anonymous emails so they could talk about their other project without their bosses catching them. And it turns out, well, Hotmail was the actual product. And then Slack started out as something, just an inter-office thing so they could solve some other problem. And then somebody said, wait, hold on a second. I think this is our product. And so you're saying that at Rubrik, you were trying to find data within the enterprise. Yeah. All the information that you had, you couldn't very well. And that was Glean.
Exactly, yeah. And the reason this happens is because like how we use technology today, like as a business, you end up using hundreds or thousands of different applications, each, you know, solving some different business need. So your data sort of, you know, gets fragmented across all those places. So now, like as an individual, I don't know where to go and look for something when I need something. You know, it's time to think about a discussion I had with you. Like, did we have it on Slack or email? Or was it like, you know, on a document, you know, where I commented and you answered that? There's so many places, you know, where that discussion could have happened. And it just becomes harder, like, you know, as, you know, companies start to use more and more tools.
Quentin, when you hear back from client companies, you were early to this idea of thinking, yeah, this would work. It's got to be satisfying to hear people say it does.
Yeah. I mean, I think everyone with a job, basically, and every student and kind of like everyone that's involved in some way or shape or form with computing experiences this problem where they know there's a piece of information out there. They may not know who to turn to find that piece of information. And they certainly don't feel like they have an interface to go to that can help them sort through everything that they've been exposed to and help them pinpoint exactly what it is they're trying to get to. And, you know, we've done these surveys and studies, right, where we know things like up to a day a week, people are spending looking for stuff, which is sort of absurd. Computers are supposed to be helping us, not something that we need to kind of manage and feed and care for in order for it to let us do our job. We have to kind of reverse that cycle. And it starts with a recognition that we're in a world where all this information is out there and is available, but you have to kind of understand it through that end user's experience and their lens and through the other people that they work with. And, you know, Glean's taken a very, you know, very opinionated point of view on the product to ensure that it's really designing around those moments where people need the information they're looking for and even get ahead of it, right? Not just wait for them to ask for it, but I can see what you're working on. I know what your calendar looks like. I know what your email looks like. Why can't I just hand you this stuff that you need?
Don't make it a paperclip, though.
Don't worry. <won't laughs> I did work at Microsoft during that era.
I was going to ask you. So you worked at Microsoft and Dropbox and SAP. You must have experienced this yourself. You get into one of those mega corporations.
Well, of course, yeah.
And yeah, just finding the data itself. Now, as a former CTO, you can give Glean good advice. Are there times in which you back away from some of your companies and think, I was the CTO, I am not the CTO of these companies, my portfolio companies, and I had best just shut my mouth?
Yeah, that's basically all the time. Look, the truth is Arvind is way more qualified to get after this problem than I am, you know, just from a technical background standpoint. I mean, the job of venture is not to run an organization. It's to be a good advisor. It's to be a good mentor. It's to help them connect the dots, you know, between the work they're doing and what else is going on in the world, to help them with customer development, to help them with hiring. The job is not to tell them what to do.
And you're relatively new venture capitalist. What
2 years.
Yeah. What surprises you about the job? What did you not expect?
There are some things I definitely did expect, which are things like last year I got to spend time understanding, you know, measuring brain signals or measuring additive manufacturing for an investment we made in Relativity Space as examples. So you get to do this really interesting intellectual work. So that was definitely something I was expecting. The things that I was not expecting are just the nature of the work is there's a lot of short-term work that's involved. Like Arvin calls or texts me and says, hey, I need like a perspective on this person, or I need to bounce something off of you. He needs that now. That's not in my operating jobs. I got a note from somebody in the team and they get on my calendar, I don't know, maybe a month later, something like that. And so you have to kind of reshift how you kind of think about time and make sure that, you know, you're kind of leaning in on everything on a day-to-day basis. But there's a part of that that's actually very freeing because you're not kind of carrying this stuff on for months and months and months. You know, you have long-term objectives with the companies that you invest in, and these are long journeys, they're 10-year journeys, and you have a bunch of short-term stuff that you're focusing on helping with.
Arvin, tell me about that relationship with Quentin and with Venture.
Yeah, I mean, it's like he says, I mean, it's, you know, we feel like, you know, Quentin is always available for us, like, you know, when we need help, any advice. And certainly, like, you know, he's never told us like, oh no, you know, you should be building the system, you know, in this particular way. You know, I know it more, like, you know, that kind of thing that doesn't happen.
You were at Google for a long time. What best practices or ideas did you take from Google that you are now using still?
Yeah, actually quite a few. Like I feel like, you know, for me, my career and most of my learnings actually happened at Google. I spent more than a decade there. The biggest lesson that I learned, and this was actually very unique about Google, was that technology comes first. The folks who build the product, who, you know, the engineers, they are really the heart of the company, of any technology company. And so like, make sure that they feel like, you know, they're the bosses in the company, right? You know, it's not the managers, you know, it's them, you know, they are the, you know, the innovation engine of the company. And that's the approach that I followed at both, you know, both of my companies after Google. That's number one, you know, hire the best people and let them, you know, be free. Let them figure out how they want to build the product, how they want to build the team, give them full freedom.
When did you start coding? What got you interested in that?
I started coding in high school. Initially it was just like, it was a subject I had to actually do it. So like, it wasn't so much, you know,
my, give me a time frame. What are we looking at high school? What years?
So this is, 1989.
Okay.
90.
All right.
So very early days, and we had a, computer curriculum. You had to sort of go and learn basic and, Pascal and a few other languages there. So it was more like curriculums. I actually didn't build like a love for computers at that time. Mostly like I thought it was like, you know, I was more interested in math, you know, other than, you know, that was more fun for me, or science than computers initially. But then I learned that, you know, you could actually like, you know, like the video games we were playing, but also these programs. And that sort of got me more excited. Oh, you know, it looks like you can do more. You know, you can do
What sort of things did you do? What did you solve? Or what did you, you know, what was the very first sort of program that,
I remember the first thing, you know, first few problems that I solved was there's a problem called Black Queen. Like, you know, you're to put eight queens on the chessboard so they're not attacking each other. And that was sort of, you know, was a problem that was given to us, and that was exciting to me to solve it. We learned a lot, like, you know, like how to just solve that problem. We built this game called Cows and Bulls, you know, like, you know, so we used to play it on paper before, and then I wrote a program for it. So it was exciting, like, you know, when you sort of get to, you know, build these things, you know, and build games, you know, which you play, that is sort of started to get me more into.
It's a pretty common experience.
Yeah, I'm going to ask you about your childhood in a second, but Cows and Bulls, is that, I'm from the Midwest, I don't know that one. What is the...
Well, it's a game where you have to guess a combination of four-digit number.
Okay.
And you have to guess all the digits and the positions of it. You have to guess the exact, the actual number, and you get seven tries.
Oh, I think of a four-digit number, you have seven tries to figure out what
figure
it is.
To figure it out, yeah. And I can, like, every time I make a guess, and you have to tell me how many digits I got right and how many.
Oh, this sounds very much like the game Mastermind.
Mastermind.
Yeah. Oh, okay, it's Mastermind. Very good. Okay, yeah. Cows and Bulls. Yes, it's like knots and crosses and things. Yeah, the different terminology. Quentin, I looked at your LinkedIn, so I'm going to put you a couple years earlier in high school than Arvind. But what were you?
Same era.
What computer did you use and what were you coding?
My first computer was a Commodore 64.
Oh yeah. Mine was an Apple II Plus.
And okay. I was writing in BASIC. And when I got the Commodore, the only thing it could do is be turned on and write code. Like there was no games, there was not even like a disk drive, there was nothing. That's all I had was like sit down and write code. And the very first things I wrote were games. I mean, I think it's a very common experience, you know, amongst our generation.
Well, I mean, it's hard to explain to an older or younger generation, you know, imagine an Xbox in which you have to create the game as well. Yes. No, I did a horse racing game and I remember running out of available memory and being proud of myself.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it was going to be that complex. And then the other thing is I had a single disk drive and I've admitted this on this podcast before, but, you know, we would pirate, we didn't know the word. Games by, you know, putting in a blank disk, letting it run for a second, pulling that one out, putting that next one in, pulling it out, et cetera. But I think we had more fun programming.
Yeah. Yeah. It was an interesting era in that everything was new. Everything was still being figured out and explored and whatever else. And you got to kind of follow that along as a, you know, as a person. And you know, here we are so many years later and, you know, the impact computing's made is outrageous. And honestly, we're still at the beginning. We're still in the early innings of how computers are affecting our world.
Fellow former teenage computer geeks, one a CEO, the other a venture capitalist, Arvind Jain of Glean and Rubrik, and Quentin Clark, managing director at General Catalyst. We'll take a few weeks off for the holidays, make family the priority it should be, and we'll be back after that with Lightspeed Venture Partners, Nicole Quinn.
Have you ever watched those Black Mirror episodes?
I love Black Mirror.
Exactly. Or Ready Player One, you know, or some of these very futuristic shows. Part of what I love about our job is I think that you learn nuggets of the future.
Sandhill Road is produced by Sean Myers under the leadership of Sarah Bueno and Stephanie Adruni. For more interviews with Silicon Valley's most influential entrepreneurs, check me out on TV at Press Here. That's Sunday mornings on NBC Bay Area and everywhere in the world on iTunes and at PressHereTV.com.